Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
I offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to His Holiness Dhanavir Goswami, and to Govardhanadari Prabhu, dear godbrother, and to all the devotees who are present here today. Hare Krishna. We're continuing our reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a recommended activity by all advanced devotees. To go on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is to come closer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one establishes one's relationship with Krishna within the heart. In the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat by Vrindavan Das Thakur, here's an astounding statement by the author, and that is that there are four direct manifestations in this world through which one becomes immediately connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And those are Ganga, Tulsi, devotees, Vaishnavas, and Srimad Bhagavatam. No need for installation or ceremonies. They're already there, available to everyone in this world. So we're blessed by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada to have the complete Srimad Bhagavatam, through which we can connect to Krishna, who makes His avatar in this world. Just after He leaves, He comes as Srimad Bhagavatam in order to give light to everybody in the world. And so tonight we're reading from verse number 25 from the fourth canto, ninth chapter, which is Dhruva Maharaj returns home. So we discussed this morning about how Dhruva had gone to the forest, and by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had met His spiritual master, and then had followed His spiritual master's instructions in Madhuvan, Vrindavan, near the Jamuna River. And he met the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gave him various benedictions, one of which was one that Dhruva didn't like very much, because actually Dhruva had a desire, a material desire, that he brought to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But after he saw the Lord Himself, he considered that desire so insignificant, and actually he considered it to be something that was unattractive in the context of pure devotional service. He considered it his own failing that he had that material desire. Nonetheless, when he met the Lord gave him complete benediction, and he told him, he ordered him that he would take over the kingdom, his father's kingdom. He would rule for 36,000 years. His senses would never change. He'd have full facility of his senses throughout the time that he was ruling in this world. And after he left this world, he would have his own planet. Because his original desire was that he had a kingdom better than his father, and better than even his grandfather of Brahma. That's a little hard to fulfill, but not for Krishna. He can do anything. But Krishna gave him all that, and Dhruva Maharaj then felt that I shouldn't have asked for anything material. In fact, there's a famous verse from the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya in which he says, Swamin kritartosmi varamna yache, that I was searching for broken bits of glass, but I actually found the greatest jewel when I found you. And this is an experience that devotees have often when they come to Krishna consciousness and they get a taste for Krishna consciousness. They see all previous activities as lamentable. Why did I waste so much time? And why did I ask for material things? So after he received these benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he came back to his father's kingdom, which was practically unimaginable. It was hard for his father to understand how this could have happened, because a little boy going in the forest for months by himself, one doesn't usually have much hope that he's actually going to come back. But he got the word that through Narada, that his little son was not only coming back, but he had met the Supreme Personality of Godhead in person and received all these benedictions. So Dhruva came back to the kingdom and was greeted as a hero who had gone off into the forest and then come back with this exalted stature. Dhruva Maharaj was so kind-hearted, and all the people in the kingdom, including Suruchi, who had originally offended him, came, and his own mother came, his father came, everyone came to greet him from the entire kingdom, and Dhruva was magnanimous towards all of them. So this is a verse from this chapter of Dhruva Maharaj returning home, back to his original kingdom, where his father ruled. It says, the personality of God had continued, "My dear Dhruva, after your material life in this body, you will go to my planet, which is always offered obeisances by the residents of all other planetary systems. It is situated above the planets of the seven rishis, and having gone there, you will never have to come back again to this materialistic, to this material world." Purport. In this verse, the word navartate is very significant. The Lord says, you will not come back to this material world, for you will reach Matstanam, my abode. Therefore, Dhruvaloka, or the pole star, is the abode of Lord Vishnu within this material world. Upon it, there is an ocean of milk, and within that ocean, there is an island known as Shvetadvip. It is clearly indicated that this planet is situated above the seven planetary systems of the rishis, and because this planet is Vishnuloka, it is worshipped by all other planetary systems. It may be questioned here, what will happen to the planet known as Dhruvaloka at the time of the dissolution of the universe? The answer is simple. Dhruvaloka remains, like other Vaikuntha Lokas, beyond this universe. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has commented in this connection that the very word navartate indicates that this planet is eternal. So, the title of this talk, this short talk tonight, is something that I took from a lyric in a song, and that is, it was a popular song that says, watch out, you might get what you're after. Because there's a way in which we may keep various desires, and those are noted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It was mentioned in the Sri Upanishad, Sapari gachchukram akayam avranam asnaviram shudam apapavitam kavir manishi paribhu swayambur yatatyatato tan vyaradashas chasvatibhya samabhyaha. And in this verse describing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's completely spiritual and able to fulfill the desires of all living entities, it says that he has been awarding everyone's desire since the time immemorial. Every living entity is having his desires fulfilled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Upanishads say, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yoviditati Kaman. And that is that there is one Supreme Eternal who is maintaining all the other individual Eternals. And in the process of pure devotional service, devotees become very much aware that Krishna is magnanimously fulfilling all of our desires. So they're very careful about what they desire and what they ask for as well. And this is one of the great lessons from the story of Dhruva Maharaj. He asked for something and he received it. But he wasn't satisfied. Not because it wasn't good enough. It was more than sufficient. But he was dissatisfied with himself for having brought up, made a suggestion that this is what I want from the Lord. The devotees, pure devotees, are noted for not asking anything from the Lord. In fact, there's a prayer by Prithu Maharaj in which he says, "My Lord, I have no idea what's good for me." So just as a father who knows what's good for a child gives him what's good for him, what I'm praying for is that you make the decision. Oftentimes, people may ask for various benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But upon receiving those, they become more entangled in the material world. So those who are on the path of pure devotional service then understand that best if I leave it up to Krishna, what's best for me, because who knows better than Krishna what's best. And in this way, devotees are completely peaceful. Krishna bhakta nishkama taiva shanta bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. This is a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says that those who want something from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, other than his eternal service, are dissatisfied. And he names, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita names, bhukti mukti siddhi kami. So bhukti means some material enjoyment. And this is a kind of fool's paradise, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Narada Muni in the 5th chapter of the 1st canto, naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam kutakpuna shashvara padramishvare nacharpitam karma yadapyakaranam. And this means that even the process of self-realization that is devoid of any material desires, if it doesn't include achuta bhava, which means emotion towards the, or and service towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's actually not very attractive. Nashobate means it doesn't look good. It's not beautiful. And then he says, what to speak of those who ask for material things? That's just plain stupid. Because as Prahlad Maharaj explains to his school friends, nobody in the history of the material world has ever gotten what they actually want. In fact, he says that as soon as one desires something material in this world, that's when dissatisfaction begins within one's heart. As soon as I think of something that I want this for myself, then you feel dissatisfied. Not only that, when you get the material thing, you get the opposite result. And Arjuna brings this up in the Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter. Nimitani paritani probably gives an entire lecture on this one phrase. Whereas Arjuna says, I came here for my betterment, but now I see, now I'm facing the war, I'm going to get the opposite of what I actually wanted. And Prabhupada goes on to point out that this is the norm in the material world. So those who are evolved in consciousness come to this understanding that if I ask for something for my own enjoyment, then I will not be happy. So bhukti, asking for material enjoyment, and mukti means liberation. That I've become so saturated by the experience in the material world, distraught even by it, and dissatisfied, that now I want to give it all up and renounce it. I want mukti, liberation from this material world. And this is also considered from the standard of pure devotional service to be a faulty wish. First of all, as Prabhupada used to point out, we don't have anything to renounce. And he would give the example of somebody walking into the Bank of America and then making the declaration that I renounce this bank and all the money in it. So I don't own the world. I don't even own my body. It's being loaned to me for a little while. And this conception of renouncing the world and all the facilities that are given to me is a kind of illusory process. And it's also considered to be a material desire in the sense that it's the opposite of material attachment. When I become frustrated with material attachment, then I just want to give it all up. But it doesn't solve the problem. On a number line, it shows negative numbers, and if you keep coming up the number line in the negative numbers, you'll come to zero. So oftentimes, those engaged in material activities become frustrated because when I endeavor for material things, then I become a debtor. Whatever I get in this world comes at a cost, means I have to pay for it later. This is called karma. Whatever I try to enjoy in the world accrues a debt. And so this is negative. And when one then tries to move away from this debt, one might keep moving up the number line and then come all the way to zero. And this is a conception that I'll renounce material life altogether and become inactive and I'll just achieve liberation from the activity. But Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Nahi kashit shanamapi jatu tishchatya karma krit karyate hyavasha karma sarva prakriti jarugunai. No living entity can remain without activity. It's our nature to desire and to actually have ambition. So coming to zero doesn't solve the problem. It's like a person who doesn't like his or her job and then goes on strike. I don't know if people are allowed to do that anymore because the unions have been so disparaged. But in case, I remember in the 1670s, people used to go on strike all the time, saying we don't like the wages, we don't like the conditions. So they're not working for the company, but they still have to go back to work at some point, somewhere. So some of the living entity who comes to the conclusion of liberation, I'll give up activity altogether and renounce the material world. Srimad Bhagavatam says this is a polluted idea. And yene ravindaksha vamuktamaninas tvayastabhavata vashuddha buddhaya aruya krishtena parampatam tata patantyato nadrita yushmadangrayaha. The demigods praying to Lord Krishna within the womb say that oftentimes people think that they've achieved some kind of liberation, but because it doesn't include reviving one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they won't be satisfied and they'll fall down from that situation. So you can't stay at zero. So bhukti, mukti, that doesn't work. Siddhi, not a lot of people are walking around Denver with siddhis these days. Of course, people do have some siddhis. When we concentrate on a certain aspect of the material energy, we can develop some kind of siddhis. People become very good at things. Sometimes, in India, there's a marketplace called Lohi Bazaar, and there, people have siddhis for selling things. If you walk down the street, they'll call out to you. They'll say, Haribo? And when you hear that sound, Haribo, because they're so focused on selling something to you, just to hear that sound, you have to hold yourself back from going in and buying so many things. And if you actually go in to buy one simple gumsha for 20 rupees, after you buy the gumsha, they say, you want sari? And just the sound vibration, you want sari, it comes into your ears and you're like, yeah, I need a bunch more stuff. How much are they? people develop cities, but there are those in the Vedic history who have fully concentrated on developing some kind of perfection that's related to the material energy. And Krishna explains how this is possible. It's not some pie in the sky. There's actually a science to how one does this. In the 11th canto, Krishna gives a brief summary of how the yogis develop these cities. He also explains how devotees naturally develop cities by through the process of pure devotional service, although they don't care for them. They're not enamored of them. And this is much the point in the verse I'm explaining, bhukti mukti siddhi, which means one can become enamored of developing some power in the material world. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. Ashanta means they're not peaceful. So this is an interesting concept that seems that is counterintuitive to the way in which I may have been taught to interact with the world, which is that if I'm successful, if I gain enough knowledge to become more successful at exploiting the material nature, and I get and I arrange for a better situation, then I'll become happy. So the Srimad Bhagavatam rejects this at the outset, and even the process of liberation is discounted as a kind of cheating. And so what we're left with is the positive numbers. The Srimad Bhagavatam points us past zero and says you can keep going past the negative numbers of karma, where you have so much debt that you can't pay it back in one lifetime, so you have to keep taking birth, and you have to rent out those extra storage lockers to keep all the karma. It's so much of it piles up, and you'll never get out of it. So Krishna gives, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the Bhagavad Gita, an offer, sarvadharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja, aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami masuchaha. Says, just surrender to me, put yourself at my mercy, and I'll absolve you of all this debt, and I'll protect you. And beyond that, devotees then develop a loving relationship with Krishna, beginning with the process of vidhi bhakti, understanding how to relate to Krishna by following the scripture. There are various ways in which the scripture tells us exactly how to organize our lives so that we can serve Krishna in various ways and naturally develop our love for him. So we can begin by following those processes, and then we come into the positive numbers of life. We're actually moving in the world not because we are in debt. We don't have to go work because we're trying to pay off all the debts. But we're moving out of service and out of dedication. Oftentimes, you know, when I'm in public, people ask me, well, what's that thing on your nose? And I say, it's a mark of dedication. We take vows to serve God for our whole life. People really like that. It's a very attractive proposition, because most people have a natural feeling that they're not getting what they want, and working very hard doesn't necessarily mean that they're becoming happier and so forth. And when you bring up this point about how happiness comes through service and dedication to the Supreme, it resonates with people because it's true and it's natural. So this is the process of bhakti. And in the story of Dhruva Maharaj, we have this wonderful example of how he had approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a desire, and the Lord fulfilled his desire, but he gave him more than that. So this is another very interesting aspect of our interaction with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is mentioned, well, the point, I haven't made the point yet, so it hasn't been defined, but I'll just say that there is a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam that says that when one approaches the Supreme Personality of Godhead and asks for material benedictions again and again, then Krishna fulfills the desire of the person who's asking, but he does it in such a way that he won't ask for it again. And instead, he replaces that desire with his own devotional service. Satyam Dishati Artito Artito Rinam Naivartito Ya Punar Artito Yata Swayam Vidate Bhajatam Anichatam Ichapitaram Nijapada Padlavam. This is first from the fifth canto, I believe, in which it is said, Satyam Dishati Artito Artito Rinam. That's when one petitions the Lord again and again. These are from the, this is included in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. And he said, so devotees who ask the Lord again and again for benedictions may receive those, but then ichapitam, ichapitadam, nijapadapalavam. Nijapadapalavam means, nija means his own. Padapalavam, his own lotus feet. So instead of giving the material thing, the Lord replaces it with his own lotus feet. So at the same time, the Bhagavatam says, although it recommends that we give up all material desires and simply surrender to the Lord, we may be in a position where we already have material desires, and at the same time we're approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita how there are four kinds of pious people that approach him. Chaturvida bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna arto jignasa artarti gyani cha bratarshaba. He says there's those who desire wealth, those who are in distress, those who are inquisitive, and those who are in knowledge of the absolute truth. And then Krishna goes on to say that of these, the one who is in full knowledge is the best, and the one who is approaching him out of a sense of wanting to serve him is the best. However, what does one do if one already has material desires? It's not such an easy thing just to leave them aside all of a sudden. So the Srimad Bhagavatam says, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udharati tivrena bhakti yogina yajeta purusham param. And that is, Shukadeva Goswami says in the Bhagavatam, if one has no material desires, akama, everyone say akama, sarvakamo means all the material desires. Sarvakamo. Is it possible to have all material desires? I mean, there's songs about it. I think that people have written sufficiently about having all material desires and still not quite getting it. I've once compiled a few of the lyrics. I can't remember them all now, but I remember, what was it? Too much is not enough. That was one lyric. Too much is not enough. Sarvakama. I mean, you can actually absorb yourself in trying to get everything in the material worlds. Sarvakama. Mokshakama. You might want liberation. Mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogina yajeta purushamparam. The suggestion is here by Shukadeva Goswami, no matter what you desire, you should still approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because by doing so, you'll become purified. The Sri Brahma Samhita gives a similar idea, and there are other verses in the Bhagavatam that say a similar thing. Yam krodha kama sahaja pranayadi piti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai sanchintitasya sadrishim tanamapureti govindamadi purusham tamaham vajami. This verse Lord Brahma says, yam krodha kama, you may approach the Lord for different reasons, out of anger, out of desire, yam krodha kama sahaja pranaya, natural friendly love, out of fear. All of these people who approach the Supreme Lord for different reasons, different motivations, because they approach him, they become purified and their desire becomes refined. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, 14th chapter, 8th verse, there's a famous statement by Lord Brahma in which he says, Tate anukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvagva purvir vidatam namaste jiveta yo mukti pate sadaya bhag. And this is the quintessential attitude of devotees on the path of pure devotional service. And that is that they patiently wait for the causeless mercy of the Lord to descend to them. all the while tolerating whatever kinds of miseries come to them in this world, accepting those miseries as the results of one's own actions, previous actions in the material world, and actually taking them as a purificatory process, that I'm getting these adverse results because of my own actions. And then it goes on to say that one who lives like this throughout one's life and goes on serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead despite the various karmic reactions that are coming from one's previous activities and doesn't deviate from the service, becomes the inheritor of the Kingdom of God. Sadaya Bhak means an inheritor. And then the purport to that verse, the commentator of that purport, cites Srila Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who say that after one surrenders to Krishna, you may take up his offer to surrender to me, and you may take up the process of devotional service. Even then, there may be the last vestiges of material desires within one's heart. And it may appear that devotees, after they surrender to Krishna, are getting reactions from their previous karma. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that's not actually karma. That's Krishna's special mercy. And how is it special mercy? It is his special mercy because he knows what the very particular desires, the residual desires that I have left within my heart, even after surrendering to the process of devotional service, are. And he custom makes the miseries and the adversities just so that I will be able to give up the last vestiges of desire to enjoy the material world. In the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we know that when Sanatana Goswami first meets Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he glances at him, and at first he says, go get cleaned up, because he had just been traveling through the jungle for a long time. Not only that, he had been part of, he had a karmi job, and he was dressed like that. So he said, you know, get cleaned up, look like a Vaishnav. He went and shaved up, and he got some cloth that he put on, and then he still had this very fancy blanket that he got from his brother-in-law on the journey there. And Mahaprabhu didn't say anything. I always love this part. He didn't say anything to him. He just said, get rid of that thing. He just kept glancing at him. He was like looking at that thing. And Sanatana was so smart that he figured out, oh, the Lord doesn't like my blanket. So he went down to the ghat where people bathe and they wash their clothes and put them on the bank. And he found this Bengali fellow who had this old torn quilt that was laid out to dry. And he brought this really expensive chadar down, and he said, here, I'll tell you what, we'll trade. And the Bengali fellow said, why are you mocking like this? You're supposed to be a Vaishnava. Why are you saying this? And Sanatana said, no, I really do want to trade. I want to give it up. So he was trying to please Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they traded, and when Sanatana came back with this old torn up quilt, Mahaprabhu looked at him, and Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami writes that he was unlimitedly happy to see. And then he says, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, when a doctor cures a disease, he doesn't allow the patient to keep the last vestige of that disease around, because it may just come back again. So he's very careful to make sure it's all gone. So in dealings with Krishna, one can expect some great excitement in one's life. Because when one tries to surrender to Krishna, even though one may have material desires, Krishna makes all kinds of really interesting arrangements. And to allow us to come to the process of pure devotional service and give up everything. And Prabhupada talks about this in his own life, that he was... He said, terrified when he had dreams of his spiritual master coming to him and saying that you should surrender, take sannyas, come out and preach, and so forth. And at that time, he said that he wasn't exactly sure how that would happen. And also, he had a business, and he said that Krishna dismantled it. He said Krishna dismantled everything. One way or another, that although he said, the astrologers said, that looking at his chart, they said, oh, you'll be as rich as Birla. Birla's, at that time, he was one of the richest people in India. He said, you'll be as rich as Birla from doing business. It's right in your stars. And try as he did in his business, Krishna dismantled everything. And he ended up, Prabhupada said, having to beg for a ticket to come to America. He didn't have any money. He had started that business with the idea of making money so he could fulfill the order of his spiritual master. But Krishna wanted him to come to America penniless. That's kind of interesting. And that may, these kinds of things may happen by Krishna's arrangement. So one can take shelter of the verses, for instance, the one I quoted, Tate Anukampam Samikshamana, which say, just tolerate these various reversals of fortune and go on serving Krishna to the best of your ability and you'll inherit the kingdom of God. Krishna will arrange it for you. And in this, as a closing statement before we take some reflections, it's helpful to observe Dhruva Maharaj's determination to meet Krishna and then to see also his lamentation after Krishna granted him what he actually originally wanted. And if one can meditate on these things and understand that the more that I hone my determination and my activities towards serving Krishna without any material desires, the more satisfied I will become. And don't be surprised if you harbor material desires, if Krishna doesn't at some point award you those desires, and then don't be surprised also if you become morose after you get them, wishing that you had instead not asked for anything, rather deferred to the kind of prayer that Prithu Maharaj made, and which I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, and that is, Krishna, you know what's best for me, so I'm not asking for anything except for you to do what's best for me. You decide. Put yourself in Krishna's hands. And as I mentioned the other night, that's a pretty exhilarating kind of lifestyle, because there's a way in which I'm always calculating from moment to moment how to best position myself in this material world for the highest happiness. But it never quite works out. So it's a more, not only is it a more successful, or it is the ultimate success process to put it in Krishna's hands, but even during one's lifespan, it's a much more exciting life, leaving it up to Krishna and then seeing what happens. Surrender to Krishna is exhilarating at every moment. Kind of like when you're leaning back in your chair and you almost tip back and hit your head, but then you catch yourself and you actually make it back. It's like that all the time. But in a really good way. And now we'll take a few reflections. Yes.
Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj. Yeah, I was just reflecting that I remember one of the first times that I saw you when you came to Denver, like 4 years ago or so. We were up in Boulder, and you made this point about if you want to, you know, we have the four regulative principles of freedom, and then the counter. You're speaking this morning also about the positives, and to take gambling. So we negate like materialistic gambling, and then spiritual gambling means to surrender everything to Krishna. And you said a prayer. What was it? It was, forgive me. The gist is what you're saying, that whatever is best for me, that's what you do. You had it was very eloquently put, it slipped my mind right now. But so when I hear that, I have this intense desire to say, yes, that's what I want to do. Is there a way in which that one can make that prayer, and then, you know, then I observe in myself, I'm saying, okay, Krishna, whatever you want for me, you do that. And then at the same time, I observe within my own heart that I have desires that I actually want. So that's one thing I was reflecting on. And then also, does it mean, you quoted the verse, sarvakama, akama, sarvakama vat, that whether you have all desires or no desires, and you're saying you should approach Krishna. So it's like, I actually have these desires that I actually want, materialistic things that I'm actually like desirous of. So then do I just, does it mean that I just connect that with Krishna? Is that...
There's even more detail about how to do that. And this is the benefit of coming through a tradition which includes great masters who have delineated the process, who have given the details. And so the process of surrender includes something very practical that you can do on a daily basis, a moment-to-moment basis, a yearly basis. And there's a sixfold process of surrender. And the first thing is that you should accept things that are favorable for devotional service. So you can study what those things are. They're actually listed in, for instance, the Nectar Devotion. And then you can decide which ones that you can now accept right now. And according to the position you're in now, you can take as much as you can. And then there's another edict, which is that you should get rid of those things that are not favorable to devotional service. So one might make a list of these things. Do you think you have a list somewhere, or could make a list of things that might be in your life? Well, let's just take a hypothetical person who lives, let's say, in Indiana. And he's living there and he decides he wants to take devotional service. And what kind of things might be on his list that he might give up in order to the process of surrender? What? Yes? TV, yeah. TV, the solution there most generally is to get some gardening shears and cut the cord after you unplug it. But that usually solves the problem. Or submerge the remote control in water, because I don't know if TVs work anymore without remote controls. You can actually make a practical list and go down the list and give up the things that aren't favorable for devotional service. This would occupy a lot of your energy and attention, and dealing with each one of these one by one. And this would be consistent with the process of surrender, because it's a process, it's not necessarily an event. Although there may be an epiphany at one point where I say, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. And then one might then realize that, oh, there's a lot more to contend with than I had originally realized when I decided to surrender. Oftentimes people come and they surrender themselves completely, and then a year later, a couple years later, they say, oh, there's a lot more, there are a lot more things here than I thought. So you can systematically then go through the process of surrender. And there are more elements to that, but that would keep one busy for a long time. Just accepting, adding things systematically into one's life that are favorable for devotional service, and eschewing those things that are not favorable. That'd keep you busy, right? And in that way, you can practically apply the practice of surrender. Sve sve adhikariya nishta sagunan parikirtita. Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that according to your capacity, you can implement this surrender, and this is a good quality. Of course, then Prabhupada puts it that we also have volition as souls, and that means that at any time, there's nothing to say that you can't completely surrender at any time if you so choose. I mean, that's the really interesting thing about being a soul, is you could just decide, all right, I'll just go for the whole thing right now. you could actually decide that. And Prabhupada gives this example when he's walking with one man who was putting an argument forward that you really have to be qualified to surrender, and that you need the adhikari to surrender. And then Prabhupada interrupted him. He said, no, actually. He said, just like if you're a poor man and a rich man comes to you with a huge bag of money, $1 billion, and says, here, take this. So what are your choices? Okay, first one, you could not take it. What's the other choice? Do you all agree? Two choices, take it or? You take it or not take it. Well, let's stick with the first analogy. So Prabhupada then says, you could just take the bag and then you'd be a wealthy man, just assuming there's no strings attached. So in another analogy, he said, if I come to you and say, I'll give you $1 billion, you say, you're a sannyasi, you don't have any money, how can I believe you? He said, but if Krishna says it, then of course you'd have to believe. It means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He owns everything. So why wouldn't you take it from him? Just take it. So at any point, there are, and who knows how one comes exactly to that point. There's the story of Lal Babu. He's mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion as a surrendered soul. He was a very wealthy man. And one day when he was walking down the street to attend to his corporation, which was making him millions and billions of dollars, there was a simple sweeper lady, and she called out to her daughter, now's the time. It was some local interaction that they were having, practical thing. And when Lal Babu heard this, he interpreted it as, now's the time to surrender to Krishna. So then he just gave up his corporation, gave up everything. He went and begged door to door, and he built that beautiful Lal Babu temple that's now near Gopinath Bazaar in Vrindavan. You can go and visit that temple. So he's famous for having surrendered within an instant to give up. But then the Shastra says that there's a way in which, after accumulation of sukriti, bhakti and mukhi sukriti within one's heart, then one develops this wherewithal. But these two ideas are there, that it's always available, one can surrender at any time. But what's recommended is that one decide to surrender and then take the process as given by our acharyas and how to implement that in the different phases of one's life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's like climbing a ladder. And when you approach the ladder, you have to put one foot on the rung. And then when you feel that that's secure, then you move to the next rung. And he says if you go too fast, you might slip off the ladder. And he said if you go too slow, then your advancement will be distant. So you have to apply yourself to the climbing process.
Guru Maharaj, this is a short reflection. I just like what you said about, Krishna will fulfill the desire in such a way that you don't want it anymore, and then you'll replace it with devotional service.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu. I've observed, and please correct the incorrections in my mentality, imperfections, but I've observed many practicing devotees who, in the name of full surrender, come to this mentality that you addressed at the beginning of your talk, which is, Bhagu Vairagya. I'm a Vaishnava, I'm going to give up all material things and live a humble life of devotional service, which in many cases may be perfectly suitable, especially for students. But does anybody know anybody who's, any devotees who are always broke, always sick, and completely unprepared to take sannyas at the end of life because they're unable to, you know, provide the necessities of life for their family? I do. I know a lot of them. And so therefore, you know, I'm trying to apply the standard process of, you know, going through the stages of life. And of course, you know, Lord Chaitanya himself has ordered everybody in the universe to take up the chanting of the holy names and to teach the chanting of the holy names throughout the people in general. So thank the Lord for all of our Indian congregation. Otherwise, we wouldn't have much facility for the spreading of the chanting of the holy names. So would you mind correcting my imperfections in my mentality and also speaking a little bit about working for Krishna?
I don't see any imperfections in you. But I will make some comments about what you said, which was very interesting. The process of surrender doesn't necessarily mean giving everything up. In fact, I spoke about how there's a way in which the idea of just renouncing, or you brought it up, there's an idea of Falgu Vairagya, which means essentially that everything belongs to Krishna, and when one utilizes whatever one has, whatever facility one has in the service of Krishna, this is called Yukta Vairagya, or well-balanced and proper renunciation. After all, everything that, all the energy in the material world, Krishna says, his original source is Krishna. So, as he mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagnau Brahmanohutam Brahmaiva Tena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhinam. And that is, when you use material things in the service of the Supreme, then they become spiritualized. They're no longer material. And the process of surrender, therefore, doesn't necessarily mean giving up everything and being sick and poor. It means utilizing everything according to the way in which you may serve Krishna in the best way. And there are ways that sometimes Krishna induces his devotees to become very wealthy because they're attached to being poor. For instance, in the story of Sudama Brahmanan, who was extremely poor and very renounced, when he went to see Krishna, as you know well, he was a pure devotee and he met Krishna and he gave him a little gift. Actually, Krishna extracted it from him because he was so embarrassed to offer such a paltry gift to Krishna. Krishna took this chipped rice, he took two morsels, and then Lakshmi, who was there at his side, said, "Don't take any more. I can't actually repay him any more than this because I'm so indebted to him." And when he returned to what was previously a rundown little thatch shack, you know, in a completely poverty-stricken area, it turned out that his estate had turned into something more opulent than Indra's abode. Huge palaces and beautiful attendants, and his wife looked like an apsara now, and so forth. Of course, Sudama took that in the spirit of renunciation, and in his commentary in this pastime, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna detected Sudama's little bit of attachment for being, you know, renounced, and therefore he gave this opportunity for the world to see how one could be renounced, whether one's poor or rich, whatever facility one has. There's a practical way in which one has to live a balanced life in order to serve Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yukta hara viharasya, yukta cheshasya karmasu, yukta swapna vabodasya, yoga bhavati dukaha. That you should live in a balanced way, and Prabhupada also emphasized this. You should keep your health. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he saw one of his very renounced and renowned pure devotees, who was so absorbed in devotional service that he was not taking care of his finances very well. He was giving everything away. Mahaprabhu asked Shivananda Sen, who was a very well-organized householder, to go and attend to this pure devotee and show him how to take care of his finances so that he didn't end up without any facility. So there's nothing that's unsurrendered about living a balanced life, a practical and balanced life, at the same time while continuing the process of devotional service. Okay? All right. Was there one more?
The prayer that, from Prithu Maharaj, which you brought up both in the beginning and the end of class, about, oh Lord, do what you want with me as a father would do with his son. I like that a lot, and I'm just wondering how that how that goes along with sometimes we see, like in Srila Prabhupada's life or other devotees' life, praying for specific things. That I'm just thinking, like in Juhu, the whole pastime of Juhu temple, Prabhupada praying to Krishna for about Mr. Nair and that they may get the property and all this. So, you know, it seems like in some instances a pure devotee does praise for specific things, and yet is it that he maintains this mood that actually whatever you do? So I'm just curious how that compares.
Well, that mood is always there with devotees. In fact, there's an incident, that mood of Krishna, whatever you desire to do. In fact, Prabhupada taught us when we offer prayers, when we were praying for Prabhupada's health, for instance, he taught us, say, my dear Lord, if you so desire, please restore the health of our spiritual master. Thank you for considering our request. So he put it before the Lord and say, this is what we'd really like. And there is a way in which, as devotees advance in the process of devotional service, a kind of request from Krishna, which is very specific, asking for a specific kind of service, pining for a certain kind of service, and asking that, please, if I can serve you in this way, this is a very effective and advanced kind of prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mood, however, of leaving it up to Krishna is always there with the devotees. There's a story that might apply that comes in the Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Vaibhav, the biographical work about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in which one devotee was very successful at developing a thriving community and was getting a lot of accolades. And some of the godbrothers became a little bit maybe disturbed by him, thinking that maybe it was just his material expertise, he wasn't actually devoted, and he was really just doing it because he was getting so much success. Maybe they were envious, I don't know, these things can happen, but they went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and they told him this: we think this person is just being successful because he knows how to work the material energy, he's not really devoted to it, he's just interested in getting all these, all the praise that comes from developing this community. And so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta called the devotee and he said, so I'm relocating you, I'm putting you on a different project. You can move from this project and leave it right away. And he was going to station him somewhere else way down in South India. And the devotee said, okay, Guru Maharaj, I'll go right away. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, okay, you can stay. Because he wanted to see if he was maintaining that mood, that yes, we serve Krishna, yes, we have a specific way in which we're asking that I want to render this kind of service. Even Srimati Radharani is asking to serve in a particular way, and even saying that because she knows she can serve Krishna better than others, so she puts herself forward and says, let me serve in this way, because her interest is to serve Krishna in the best way possible, and she knows that she can do it. So, but the mood there is that it's for Krishna and whatever he wants. So there is a refinement of desire that comes as one becomes purified and one's actually in touch with the spiritual energy and praying to serve Krishna in a particular way. Of course, Krishna gives his instructions, and if one simply attaches oneself to those and says, let me fulfill this order. For instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives an open order to everybody in the world. This is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mahaprabhu said, I order every person in the universe to take up the Sankirtan movement. So he gives this order. And he also says, wherever you go, whomever you meet, whoever you see, you should give them Krishna consciousness. In this way, he said, take my order, become an advanced devotee, become a guru devotee, and preach all over the world. And so that order is out there, available to anybody, and someone then could develop what we call spiritual ambition and say, okay, I'm taking that order. I'm taking a personal order, and everybody is welcome to do that. And take that as a personal instruction and say, I'll completely embrace this. And one may pray vigorously that, please, my Lord, let me fulfill your order. And please give me all the facility in the world to fulfill this order. And this Prabhupada describes is a symptom of a very advanced devotee who's thinking 24 hours a day how to use everything to fulfill the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or a very specific order that he or she gets from the spiritual master. And all these are in the realm of the positive numbers. And the prayer that I mentioned from Prithu Maharaj is really a basic prayer, an understanding that ultimately it all has to be sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you so desire, please let me do this for you. And if you don't, and Prabhupada had plenty of reversals, he prayed for many different things, and not all of them worked out. But he just kept going on. There were other projects that he wanted, but they didn't work. Apparently, it didn't work. And I heard the conch shell, so I want to thank you all for the wonderful times that I've had being with you all in the last few evenings. And all glories to your service. Please go on with great enthusiasm. Gaur Premanande Hari Bol. Shishi Korni Tai Ki Jai. Shishi Radha Govinda Ji Ki Jai. Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ji Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Nitai Gaura Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Nitai Gaura Hari Bol. Nitai Gaura Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Hari Bol. I go to Hari Bol.
Natchariyar Marman. Hey, Natchariyar Marman.